Seems like every week there's a new scam or data breach to be aware of, and if you worry that you might not be taking all of the necessary precautions, you are going to want to stay tuned. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke are here to share great information on staying safe as consumers. They'll tell us what scams are making the rounds in our state. Michelle is the administrator of the DATCP's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michael is its director. At 12:30, we'll hear about pink tax. That's the additional cost women pay for products like razors and soap compared to men. But first, what consumer protection issues are you worried about? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or shoot an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, June is Elder Abuse Awareness Month. How often are older Americans the targets of scams compared to middle-aged and younger Americans? Michelle, do you want to take that?
Absolutely, Larry. It's great to be here. Thanks for having us. And, you know, people might be surprised. According to the Federal Trade Commission, our national consumer protection partner, consumers over 60 are less likely than younger consumers to lose money to scams and fraud. But when they do lose money, they are more likely to lose larger amounts. And part of that is the methods of which they're contacted and that they have, in some cases, more money to lose. So the average reported loss for consumers under 60 was less than $500, but those 60 and older, it was nearly $1,000 lost per consumer. So it's really impactful for them. And we want to make sure during this upcoming Elder Abuse Awareness Month that we kind of go through those scams that target consumers and especially our older consumers, but talk about a positive way to share experiences so there's no victim blaming here and we really are blaming the scammers and have that open environment for conversation.
Let's talk about some of the scams that target older people. Then the grandparent scam comes to mind right off the bat.
Yeah, absolutely. The grandparent scam is when that scammer calls you and pretends to be a family member. And often they're pretending to be an older consumer's grandchild. They may know specific details about the family member. And we have seen in this last year that artificial intelligence or AI is creeping into this scam because scammers are taking a copy of voice images, usually found online through social media, and using that to impersonate the voice of that individual, that grandchild, to really get that consumer to fall victim for that. Then they ask for money to help with an emergency and ask you not to tell other family members, always keeping things a secret. So the big takeaway is here, never send money before verifying it's a real request and consider making a secret family password, if you will, so you have a way to confirm it's really a family member and not this scammer who's using artificial intelligence to sound like that family member.
So something like bonanza or as just a simple word that everybody knows.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything that's going to be relevant to the family, you know, probably not a family pet's name because that could probably be found on social media. But something that goes back in history, maybe it's the imaginary friend's name, you know, when you were 5 years old, or maybe it's going to be some kind of nickname you had when you were younger that isn't posted everywhere for people to know. Some set up the family password to be the birthday present you got when you were 10 or something, if everyone can remember that and it wasn't shared publicly. Another scam that really impacts older consumers is a Medicare scam. And you might see an ad offering big discounts on health insurance that require personal information to make sure you qualify. But this is especially common during the open enrollment period in October, November, and December each year. So I know we've spent time talking about it during that period of time, but it does happen year round. So before ever sharing Medicare information, call Medicare to be sure that any offer you're receiving is a truly legitimate request, no matter the time of year, open enrollment or outside of that period of time.
That makes a lot of sense to me. There are some tech support scams out there, Michael. Maybe we'll get you involved here a little bit. What about some of those tech support scams?
Well, these are very common, targeting certainly older adults, and are a very popular inception point for a lot of other scams that migrate off of them. But at its core level, what happens is you get a call or a message or even that pop-up from your computer that says you have a virus. And then behind that, there is a tech support agent that says they're from Apple or Microsoft or any other program you're using. And they ask to take control of your computer to help identify what's wrong and fix that problem. Or maybe they're going to sell you a cleaning service that'll get rid of that virus that may or may not even exist. And sometimes we even see them transfer you to another agency, particularly a federal agency, that'll help you fix that compromised identity or those financial accounts. But in reality, they're transferring you to scammers. So like many other scams, we want to encourage everyone to just hang up. Apple, Microsoft, those programs, they're not going to call you and tell you that you have a virus. And they're certainly not going to transfer you to another federal agency to try and fix that. There are people that can help. DadCat can certainly help when situations help with your identity. So we just want you to hang up, don't engage, and keep yourself protected.
So lots of good information there. Let's, maybe you haven't been scammed yourself, but you know someone who has. When someone tells you about their experience being scammed, how should you react? Michelle, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Sharing a scam experience with someone can really take a lot of courage, because you have to admit that you were fooled, if you will, even though there's all this conversation about scams. And we want to give guidance, should someone trust you enough to share their scam story, especially if that scammer is still in touch, because you can have great influence in being able to get the individual who's being victimized on a new path. So the first thing is to really just lead with empathy. You know, don't victim shame. Respond with kindness and concern instead of criticism or disappointment. We know scams can happen to anyone. The most educated individual, the most influential individual, anyone at all. So don't blame that victim. Keep those lines of communication open with a kind and concerned response. But then let them tell their story. Talk about, they're going to be talking about their scam experience, and it's going to help both you and them understand what happened. And talking about the scam also helps both of you spot it in the future, because you can go over. But don't interrupt and let them tell their story. Let it be their time. And then validate the story. The only person at fault here is that scammer, not the friend, not the family member, not the older consumer. So ask them not to blame themselves and instead blame the scammer, and help give them permission to move forward, to hang up the next time. But then you can work together. You need to ask what you can do next together to get to that recovery stage. So see if their personal information was involved. If so, identity theft could be a concern. See if they can do that recovery process on their own, or if they're going to need help contacting DadCap about those next steps. But check their comfort level. Check if the financial institutions can help, and if you are trusted enough to go with them, or if they'll take care of that on their own. But try and follow through to be sure that they do take those steps necessary to get on that path of recovery and stop any damage that could potentially be done.
You know, maybe we should give the number to call DadCap and the address. We do usually do that several times during the course of the show, and let's do it right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You can reach Consumer Protection at the hotline, 1-800-422-7128. Or you can go to our website to get information on a number of topics we'll talk about today or beyond what we'll be able to cover today. at datcp.wi.gov.
Talking today with our two guests, Michelle Ryan, administrator of DATCAP's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michael Domke. Michael's director of the DATCAP's Bureau of Consumer Protection. Questions for them? I hope you'll give a call. Number 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us. Email address talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to WPR News. We are talking consumer protection issues with our guests today, Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, of course, within the Division of Consumer Protection. So it's great to have them with us today. And we've got a lot of lines that are open here. Lots of people have called in. Before we go to the phones, I do want to get to the home title part of this. I couldn't believe that somebody was able to steal somebody else's home title. And let's talk about that for a bit. Michael, do you want to talk about that?
You bet. So the home title theft is something that we hear about during our outreach presentations and conversations that we're having. And it is something that is certainly out there. What this really means is that even though we may be homeowners and have that house and we're not looking to sell it, it's not enough to keep those offers from coming in. And recently, DATCAP received a case or was notified about a situation where home title theft is sometimes referred to as title fraud or deed fraud or house stealing, was reported, and they said that the scammers had taken the identities of the property owners and then tricked a real legitimate realtor into listing that property and actually took several offers on that property and had engaged in actually accepting some of those offers before those homeowners just happened to be online and saw that their own house was being offered for sale. Thankfully, they caught that and were able to kind of stop that in the process. But we want to bring awareness to this during June, which is National Homeownership Month, and remind homeowners that all con artists need to commit this type of fraud is your personal information and a little bit of patience. Now, home title theft is a little bit complicated and involves the transfer of the property without the owner's knowledge, but they do this by creating these fake IDs, fake social security numbers, and other documents that you need to sell a property. And then they transfer that home and they try to sell it, or they'll transfer the deed into their name, or in other situations, they'll take out a loan and try and draw on that equity with a home equity line of credit, maybe refinance the mortgage, but all of these have that negative impact on your home.
Boy, they do indeed. And it always amazes me the depths that people will sink to try it and make a little extra money for themselves. We'll take some calls now. Rick in Bell Center, we'll give you a chance to join in. Rick, thanks for calling.
Two things. One, for the last year and a half, maybe a little longer, I keep getting about once every 2 weeks a phone call, and I have blocked the number on my cell phone, but the message is the same. It's a woman's voice who says that I owe money on my taxes and they can help me arrange payment, except I don't owe any money. I don't owe any taxes, and I don't know why this keeps happening, and I don't want to necessarily call the number back and tell them to stop because that might get more trouble going. And the second thing is, I found the discussion just previous to this about stealing the title interesting. I wish the guy who was talking would say a little bit more about how they get their hands on these titles. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Well, let's take the taxes part first. Michelle, do you want to take that?
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry to say, Rick, they cast a broad net here. They're not targeting you specifically. I mean, if you answer the phone, they're going to repeat calling in hopes that you engage. Sometimes if a machine picks up, but they are just casting that net broadly, whether you owe taxes or not, in hopes someone is tripped up by the fact that, ooh, government's involved and I don't want to be in trouble with the government, especially when the words taxes are used. So Continue to disregard this call. Don't call the number back. Hang up. If anyone out there gets this call and is at all concerned, contact the IRS directly or the Department of Revenue directly using phone numbers you find on their websites. But you'd be notified by letter first. And then again, as a follow-up, they're not going to make a phone call to you if you do owe payment. And I'll turn that second question back to Michael to see if he wants to expand a little bit on that title.
Don't give step-by-step ways of how to do it, though, Michael.
Oftentimes, I find we're in that situation where as we explain how it happens, we're actually showing all the ways that you could commit it yourself. And that's not what we're going to try and do here, but it is good. And there are several different ways of which this can be committed because it depends on what that criminal or that scammer is trying to get. Are they trying to get the deed for the house? Are they trying to take out a loan? But all of them start with identity theft. They start with some portion of the identity being compromised, and that could be solicited in many ways. The tax ID or the tax call could be a scenario where they're just calling, they want to verify some information, and that could be the inception point. Others are, we may be getting those mailers with those offers to buy the house, and you provide a little bit of information because you're curious maybe what it's worth. Well, those are all those little bits and pieces that these scammers start using to put together. And then what happens is they pretend that they're the homeowner. They get those documents and they purport to be the actual homeowner. And a real estate agent, especially say a vacation home, wouldn't be a surprise to be receiving a call from somebody who maybe doesn't live out of state or doesn't actually see them in person. And so then they start to go through the same process that you would if you were legitimately selling a house. But with those fake documents and this fake information, they purport to be the homeowner. And it's very difficult for some of those real estate agents to pick up on that. But there are some things you can look out for if you aren't participating in that. Things that homeowners should investigate and look at right away if they're happening. And the first is unexpected mail relating to the sale of your property, especially from a mortgage company. That's even if your name's not on it. If it has an ad, your address, and it appears to be a title transfer or something to do with the closing, but it's not your name, that's a red flag that you're going to want to follow up on. Another is phone calls inquiring about your property. And that's both those ones that say, hey, we're looking to buy, we're interested, we're local, but maybe asking some more details. And then really what we want to make sure is if you're not receiving any of those bills, any mortgage statements, or if you have an automatic withdrawal to make that mortgage payment that suddenly stops, that's a red flag. We may get excited thinking we don't have to make those payments, but in reality, what that means is potentially that property could have been sold and therefore somebody else has it. So without getting into too many more details, because there's so many variations and we could spend a half an hour probably bore your listeners on how that happens, but the key is to make sure we know what you're looking for.
Yeah, and I think that's really good advice, business about kind of when to get suspicious. And also the other part of that is being careful that you're not giving information out to the wrong people, for sure. So thanks for that call. Let's go to Jody in Brooklyn next. Hi, Jody.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My situation is I've recently become aware of my elderly mother receiving packages from Publishers Clearinghouse that she did not send for. I'm surmising that she's on some type of an auto send type of thing, and at first she could return them, and now they come, and on the outside it says, cannot be returned, invoice inside, and I'd like to know what I can do to help her.
Oh, that's a good one, Michelle.
Yeah, this is a perfect situation to file a complaint with Consumer Protection, so we can help assist. You can help your mother file that, you know, in her name. But there was a settlement with Publishers Clearinghouse and the Federal Trade Commission. Now, that's the legitimate Publishers Clearinghouse. And their tactics and deception and trying to engage consumers into trying to win and those purchases that they had. And so we're going to want to look at this in context to that, as well as make sure it's the legitimate Publishers Clearinghouse and not a new variation on the very common scam that's out there, usually by phone, impersonating Publishers Clearinghouse, indicating people won something. But the fact that she's getting packages on her doorstep leads me to believe it's more on the legitimate side, and we'll want our mediation team to assist with making contact on that and trying to get this to stop.
And Jody could call, what is it, 1-800-422-7128, if I'm not mistaken?
Absolutely. Or if it's more convenient, go directly to the website at datcp.wi.gov, and you can file the complaint right there on the online services portal.
Jody, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Let's go to Susan in Madison next. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I'm calling. I am a real estate agent, and I receive probably 3 to 5 spam emails per day for listings. And the scammers are very, very effective in their tools. And as an industry, we have tools to verify people's identity, but sometimes the level of fraud is really impressive. And I was wondering if the state or Consumer Protection Agency is considering doing anything like a deed restriction that individuals can just choose to put on their property with like a secret password so that this can stop happening.
Well, it sounds like Susan is getting a lot of business or bad business. What about her suggestion?
As far as her suggestion, that would be one of two things. It either have to be at the municipal or county level government, or it would be at the state legislative level. So that's something that if we're asked about latest scams, we can certainly put that idea out there. But it can also come from individuals like yourself towards your legislator and put that out there to explain the problem, because often you're the one experiencing it. So you help feed that process that way as well. And you could contact your local legislator.
Thanks so much for that question. Appreciate it very much. Do we have Lucy in Madison? I think not. Let's go to some emails. Ann in Sun Prairie is wondering if there's still a state or federal no-call list. If so, is it worthwhile to get on the list to reduce unwanted phone calls?
There is still a no-call list, but back in 2014 with a legislative change, we merged our list with the Federal Trade Commission. So now there's only one, which means you only have to sign up one place. And once you're registered, that's a lifetime registration. So the question always asks, does it work? Because you still get some of those phone calls. And my answer is always, yes, it does. That no-call list will tell those legal registered businesses who want to do things the right way that you don't want to receive those calls, and they'll comply with that. Now, will that mean you're going to get every single phone call will stop from coming in? Unfortunately, it does not, because there's going to be some bad actors who just don't want to comply with the law. And there's going to be some scenarios where certain organizations or have an exemption where they're allowed to call for certain purposes and ask questions. But at the core, we encourage everyone to sign up for that no-call registry, and it will certainly reduce some of those calls from coming in.
It's kind of relating to this. Patrick in Ogdensburg called to say received a phishing call from a scammer. They went ahead and added two-factor authentication to their phone number, and is wondering if that will be enough to avoid getting such calls in the future. I'm not sure how that would work.
Larry, I haven't heard of two-factor authentication for receiving a phone call, but we've always encouraged any opportunity you have to utilize two-factor authentication is certainly worth it. We understand that it may take an extra few seconds to enter that code, but that added level of security, which requires, you know, the actual person to have the device to make it happen, makes it that much more difficult for a scammer to be successful, because they may have your personal information or maybe even a password, but it's often unlikely that they also have access to the device in which you're getting or the program that security code's sent to. And so that added level of security, especially in today's day and age where we're seeing a lot of information being circulated, is worth exploring. And I'd love to hear more about two-factor authentication on everyday phone calls.
Yeah, I would too. Betty in Dubuque emailed about receiving a Medicare scam telephone call. A scammer asked Betty if she'd received a new Medicare card sent in the mail. But Medicare doesn't contact people by telephone. Yet the person online wants Medicare information, claiming they want to check the status of the new card.
Isn't that great? They supposedly sent the card, but they're doing verification and need the info, but they're from Medicare, so they should know all about it. So, Betty, I hope, you know, hung up on that. It sounds as though she may have done that, recognizing it was a scam. And it's really important to report those situations to Medicare so they know what's circulating, and consumer protection, so we can get the word out on your program. And you can reach Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE, and that's 1-800-633-4227 if she'd want to report that that's circulating. But it's so funny, that scam. You know, they say they're from Medicare and they just want to do that validation on a new card. And if you could give them all the info that's on that card, but they should have it. So they put that red flag right out there. But you get thrown off because you're getting a call from Medicare, who doesn't call. And so it seems unusual. It's the government and you want to be responsive. So they're very good. They're very good at trying to just tip you off your balance so you will be responsive.
We have Rick in Portage County with a comment or question. Rick, what's on your mind?
Hey, Larry, I would like to report that we had quite a clever scam over the phone from a gentleman who purported to be from our service, our satellite provider, Dish Network, and he had our customer number and a whole bunch of other, you know, not real intimate information, but he gave us his badge number, he gave us his name, and he said that they were going to provide us with an update and in our service, and it would cost us personally $149. And we obviously started to get a little suspicious right then and there. And he then went on to state that if we didn't give him our bank information, and they would cut off our service in 24 hours, at which point over my wife's shoulder, I more or less said, and she was very suspicious already, fine, we'll go to DirecTV. And he hung up immediately. But it was actually quite clever. They kind of had us both going a little bit for a while.
Oh, boy. Well, Rick, you were smart there. That's a good thing to do. But comment on that, Michael?
I do. You know, Rick provided a good example that illustrates some of the key components of a lot of scams that we see, but it also shows that these scams can take place anywhere for any type of industry or business or way of life that we have. That phone call out of the blue from somebody you may know with just a little bit of information starts planting that seed. And then as they go through that conversation, they try to get that personal information. And then, of course, it's now we want the money. And then they create that sense of urgency and immediacy, where if you have to pay right now to get that update, and then of course it becomes threatening, where if you don't react and do what they say, then there's going to be something detrimental. And so Rick really just talked us through a life cycle of what almost all scams try to place.
Rick, thanks again from Portage County. Let's go to Rick in Monona. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Larry and everyone. I can't believe how many scams are out there. I work as a receptionist at another radio station, and they have a landline, and I get all these scams, people calling in and asking me if I have Medicare. And the other one is I get emails that tell me that thanking me for my purchase, and it's always in the hundreds of dollars. And it looks like it's a real official thing until you actually go to the email address of the person, and it's always Gmail or something like that. You just know it's not an official thing, but it really gets your attention immediately. You go, I didn't buy this. And then you kind of want to react to it and call, but you have to calm yourself down. But my question is this. Do any of these people ever get busted? I mean, I don't think these are people that are working on their own. I have a feeling it's like a syndicate. Do they ever get caught and punished somehow?
Yeah, I think they do sometimes, Michelle.
Yeah, we work with a team of individuals on those types of cases because they aren't just local, regional, or state. They are national, international in their impact. And so we work with our other states' consumer protection programs, our Federal Trade Commission, who also works with, when appropriate, the FBI, Homeland Security, U.S. Postal Inspection Services, and international partners to break down some of these rings. They are able to get after the money mules in many cases who are transporting the money, the individuals. Sometimes there's a larger entity behind some of these things. Other times, it is an individual, and they've been able to get after them. I think one of the more significant situations that I recall is from around 2017 when the IRS scam was going around like crazy. It was every single phone call. It was the scam. And they were able to break up 7 phone rings internationally, primarily, if I recall, out of India. But they were able to break up 7 of these different phone centers working with the IRS and international partners and FTC and Homeland Security. So some are smaller, and sometimes they are able to go after those who are helping transmit and allow the crime to go on to facilitate the action. And so there's been settlements with, you know, well-known names like MoneyGram and Western Union because they're transporting the money and they're facilitating it and allowing the situation to happen and not participating in a positive way to break it up that way too. So yes, it takes time, but these individuals do get caught and prosecuted.
Rick, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Department of Division of Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my guests Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from our Division of Consumer Protection. It's great to have them with us. You can join in too. Maybe you've got an experience to share or a question to ask about consumer protection. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Gwen in Fitchburg next. Hi, Gwen.
Yes, I have a question. Today, as a matter of fact, this is about the third time I've gotten this email saying that Bitcoin has been purchased for $799, and it gives all kinds of numbers and everything like that. And I just deleted it, but I'm wondering if anybody else has gotten those emails.
Michael?
Hi, Gwen. Well, this email is very similar to many other where they're trying to get you to confirm something happened. And Bitcoin is a unique one because they're likely going to be asking for you to verify a kind of account number, the wallet number, and cryptocurrencies, specifically Bitcoin, because it has name recognition. And we often associate it with being the most popular type, is becoming the most commonly used type of currency in all of these scams. And that is because it is very difficult to trace that back and get the money back once it's invested. So I love to hear that you're deleting those emails. Mm-hmm. I know that your suspicion of, hey, is there somebody else potentially buying with your information? I doubt it. I think that that email is just an attempt to try and get you to either verify an account information or lure you in under the auspice that there's maybe $799 waiting for you and get you to kind of take that bait and start offering some information. So please keep deleting them.
Thanks, Gwen. Appreciate it. Let's go to Sandra in Eau Claire. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Larry. I've got a really kind of a sad story. I have a friend who somehow got sucked into some scam where And they're saying that this is a Ukrainian woman who is a war survivor, and he believes that this girl loves him, and he's given over $42,000 to this scam. The credit card company called him and said, this looks like a scam. And he said, no, and gave her all this money, and I think it's still going on, and we can't we can't convince them it's not real. And she'll say they don't even talk in person. It's just texting or some weird cryptic way that they talk, and then say, oh, she's coming to visit him. So you'll buy a ticket to like Los Angeles. And then all of a sudden, you know, her mom is sick, or I need $1,000 to buy a generator for my mom, or weird stuff boy. Like that. How can we stop this?
Yeah, that's terrible. Michelle, do you want to take a crack?
Yeah, this is the deep dive into the romance scam. And this one's pretty tough because there's emotional connections there. And that's going to be hard to break. They're not responding to the credit card company. And, you know, when it's a bank, sometimes the bank will have to, what we say is, divorce the client and cut them off because it could be tied to international terrorist actions type situation is what banks indicate. So they have an obligation there to not be funding that those situations when it gets into that amount of money. Documentation is going to be one way, trying to get others who can help support you in this conversation with the individual is going to be an important piece of it. And what I mean by documentation is trying to find the materials you can about the romance scam and gently identifying those red flags that you are seeing in those specific situations. And this is going to be a process that you are going to have to go through. And you could get cut off because they're not going to want to share openly any more information with you because you're not trusting their judgment, if you will, on this. But the more you can learn about the situation, the more red flags you'll be able to point out. The other thing is if you can do kind of a reverse Google search, if you have enough information to be able to find other situations and other profiles that match this individual, because a scammer usually doesn't have just one relationship. They're going to set up multiple relationships that they foster along the way with all these same identifiers or photos, but maybe some different names. So that could also help bring some reality, but you may need to, consult some other individuals. Our Wisconsin Consumer Guide does have a portion on romance scams. So that could be one source. The Federal Trade Commission also has information on romance scams. And not knowing the age of the individual, the AARP also has tremendous information on romance scams, and their fraud line might be able to help as well.
Oh, I'm sorry for what your friend's going through, Sandra, and actually what you're going through. And you're really a good friend to be trying to help. So thank you so much for that. And I hope you'll take Michelle's advice to heart. Appreciate it very much, your call. Susan and Madison, your turn. Hi, Susan.
Sure. Well, I have received many, many of the Medicare calls and others as well. And I don't have caller ID on my phone, so generally I answer. And one time with this Medicare one, I looked at my Medicare number, made up a number that had the right number of numbers and letters in it, gave it to them, and the next person that called me used that Medicare number that I had made up to try to get me to fall for the scam again. So I assume that they're all kind of, some of them are at least, are connected. And I've also found that if I answer my phone yes instead of hello, a lot of times nobody's at the other end. They just click down. It's done.
Interesting. Michael, comment on that?
I do. Susan gave a good example of some of these things these scammers will do, and where they're just having those conversations. And while we always encourage everyone, you know, not to engage, you really don't know when it's a scam, you know, until maybe you get some of those red flags, you have a time to filter out when it's through. And what we also hear is sometimes they want to engage for a variety of reasons, to find out more, or, you know, maybe think that they're going to learn more about the scam, but they may not be understanding that little pieces of information are being gathered from that conversation. And while they're not overtly trying to maybe scam at that point, they're capturing those. And then they're going to use those information, that information, to circle around and commit another scam. And maybe they learn a little bit more there, and they'll come back again from another angle with another scam. And all these are starting to pull together little bits and pieces that we think are, you know, useless, but they're building a bigger profile. And I'm glad that Susan was giving away that fake information and not doing it for real. But this is how those scammers build and build and build. And then in regards to that just click and hanging up, that is doing a couple things. The first is that scammer is trying to validate whether that's a live line or if there's somebody truly on that line, so they can, again, call back with different scams, thinking somebody may potentially engage, or they might be trying to get you to say something. Most oftentimes it's, can you hear me? And they want to get you to say yes, so they can record that yes for a couple of different reasons. Might be so they can sign you up for a subscription, or maybe if somebody asks, hey, did you know you approve them to call you, they'll use that recording to say yes, they, here it is, there's their voice, they wanted to talk. So again, hang up on those, don't engage. Anytime you hear that silence or can you hear me or press the button to continue, hang up.
Yeah, and Susan, you might, so keep in mind what Michael said about yes. Yes is not a good way to, if you're going to engage at all, it's not a good way to do it for sure. Louise in Richland Center, do you have a comment?
Yes. I got taken in by what I believe was a fake website. I was searching for a particular product. I Googled the product, and I got those, you know, Google shopping results. I clicked on one of them and thought that I ordered the product that I wanted.
But the money went somewhere else.
I used PayPal. But the money went to an individual in Singapore.
Oh, boy. Michelle, a comment.
Yeah, these imposter and fake websites are one of the leaders, one of the leading scams that people are being taken for. And we certainly are seeing quite a bit of it. And that's the tough thing, is making sure that you are at a legitimate website that you can validate before engaging in a transaction and handing over any of your information. So I suggest that you make changes to your PayPal login to make sure that you're securing that. And then we also suggest that you use a credit card as often as possible as well, so you do have some federal protections and can dispute those charges when you don't receive your product or that product is inferior to what was described, if it ever shows up. But we've seen a number of well-known companies be impersonated. And whenever you find that hard to get item or that deep discount on a popular item or expensive item, those are some of the signs that that's an imposter website.
Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke, our guests today from the Division of Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mailer for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mailer here, taking a look at consumer protection right up until 12:30 today with our two guests, Michelle Reinen, one of them, administrator of DATCAP's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michael Domke with us as well, director of DATCP's Bureau of Consumer Protection. At 12:30, we'll hear about the pink tax. That's the additional cost women pay for products like razors, soaps, and so forth compared to men. But first, you have a consumer concern. What experiences have you had with telemarketers or whatever? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And let's take another caller. Tom at River Falls will give you a chance. Hi, Tom.
Hi there, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Back in February, I got a notice here from a company, and it's like a credit clearinghouse because I didn't work with them directly. They said that they were breached and that this company was offering to do credit, sign me up for credit monitoring. And I'm just wondering, has it been a history of companies getting on you, doing it?
Yeah, I understood. Michelle, comment?
Yeah, unfortunately, the language we use today is no longer if a company ends up being breached, but when. And so it sounds like he received a breach notification letter and is being offered, probably for a limited period of time, free credit monitoring services, and that those wouldn't be facilitated by the company that's been breached, but they've made arrangements with one of the credit reporting agencies or something to do that monitoring service. So many consumers take advantage of that because they don't do the steps that they can do free of charge on their own, because they take time and effort to be monitoring your identity. But know that you're handing over some of your personal information to that credit monitoring company that will be doing that work. So you want to make sure you know and understand how they're going to protect your data, and also be sure that you kind of keep track of who has that information, and that you don't fall into a situation when the free service is over, you're into a paid service, that you are paying attention to something that could roll. But those are things you'll want to consider. So check out the company to be sure that they haven't had complaints that you would have do the monitoring for you, that they are offering that connection with.
Yeah, there you go, Tom. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Joyce in St. Croix Falls, we'll go to you. Hi, Joyce.
Hello. Thank you. I have a question. This is regarding customer service, and I have I'm trying to lock up things for a cruise, and the customer service call that I can find online leads me to customer service anywhere. There were two calls from people in the Philippine Islands, and in the background, it sounded like they could either be at home or at an office with others. And I was asked to give some information. The one caller said, do you mind if I record, or I need to record this? And she recorded my credit card number and so forth, other information, and then asked that I would hold, if it would be okay if I held, because her computer was slow, and which I did. And the next caller also, or the next person I called also from the Philippine Islands, trying to resolve further, asked me the same, but did not record. I don't think I gave my personal information, but also he had me hold while he checked. He asked if it was okay if he checked my information. With the cruise number that I gave to him. And then I called another number, someone in Arizona. He also asked if I would hold, but he seemed to have indicated that there was something that I would be, he didn't say I was charged for it, but I could tell I hadn't ordered it. So I am just wondering how I can go through the app on my phone. Is that safer? And how safe are these customer service calls for giving out, when I call for giving out my information?
Yeah. Michael, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. You know, Joyce identified a problem that's making it very difficult as we talk about all these scams and a world that is moving to a digital environment. It's getting tough to figure out what is legitimate and what is not. But we have to remember there are still scenarios in which if you are buying something online or you are making phone calls and maybe going on that cruise where they're going to want to verify that, in fact, you'd signed up or maybe some changes took place. And it's really trying to identify if there's any red flags or things happen in between, because just not answering the phone or ever talking on the phone or ever responding to anything would be very difficult to go anywhere. So in Joyce's situation, you know, I like that she said that she was not really providing any information, but it's not uncommon for a business, especially if you're booking a vacation, to want to verify or get record that affirmation that yes, in fact, you want to make that purchase and record that confirmation of what particular booking information that you have. It is possible also that that business would follow up to make sure that you got what you needed, maybe a customer satisfaction call, or if there were some changes or even follow-up offerings to add to maybe that vacation. So I don't want to say that every time that happens, it's a scam and that you can never answer that phone call. Now, the question about is the app reliable? If you downloaded the app and you're confident that that is, it's possible that's an added level of security when compared to answering the phone call and giving information or responding to an email or a text message with a link asking you to go somewhere. The message we always want to send is you want to control the flow of communication. You know, with Joyce, we want to make sure that if she's booking us, she's going to a place that she knows is trusted. Maybe it's that app, or maybe it's a phone number she got from a friend and knows legitimate. So it's tough to say that exact scenario, you know, is a scam, because it's very possible that there are real situations in which that type of behavior actions would occur. But again, it's looking for the things we talk about on these calls and the information that we give of when things start to get suspicious, knowing when to stop and think about the next action.
In Joyce's situation, would if she used her credit card and gave her credit card number, if you went to your online to your actual credit card to see what transactions had taken place, you might be able to tell, or would you be able to tell perhaps if, you know, if there's $500 to out there, you know, to identify, oh yeah, in fact, that went to the travel company or where it was supposed to go.
Sure. That would be a great way to verify that it was legitimate. One thing caution a little bit is sometimes, you know, parent companies bill under different names, or we have kind of these larger corporations that are operating under doing business as or things. So it may not be exact, but you definitely want to check that that amount's the same. You also want to make sure there aren't any additional charges going to that company, because if they have that number, chances are they might not just limit it to that exact amount that you agreed upon. They're going to try and get a little bit more if possible, if it is truly fraud. But going back and checking that, certainly a great tip.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Joyce. Sabrina in Kenosha, it's your turn. Hi, Sabrina. Sabrina, are you there? I think maybe we lost Sabrina. Let's try Mary Kay in Kenosha. Mary Kay, hello.
Hi. About caller ID, if you hide it on your phone, can the spam people still spam you, then we should also have a two-step for our telephone. We should have a two-step for all of our accounts. We should hire a yearly account for security on our accounts every year. The Better Business Bureau needs to start making these computer businesses make reports. We should be reading these reports and seeing if these reports are up to date about them businesses being legal. So these things could help.
So comments. Michelle, do you want to take comment?
Yeah, I mean, I think what Mary Kay is getting at is making sure that we're putting in place all the security measures that we can in relation to using our devices, making sure that we have that two-factor authentication. We've heard twice today about being able to do that with your phone. So I think the actual smartphones that you log into, locking those. But if there comes a step where you can put in a password before you dial or answer, that could be something if that comes. I'm not familiar with that. And I like the idea of, you know, making sure that there's reports. Well, the Better Business Bureau isn't in a position, they're not a regulatory body, so they're not going to be able to mandate that companies write reports unless they make it part of their credentials for their members who are part of things. But I do think what I'm taking away from Mary Kay's comment is doing the research on companies before you engage with them, reading privacy policies and understanding who you're doing business with and how they're protecting the data that they take from you. So all good ideas on that security front and trying to keep ourselves safe from these scammers.
Yep. Thanks again for that call. Craig and Merrimack, we'll go to you. Hi, Craig.
Hi, how you doing, Larry? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to talk a little bit about some of the options out there for monitoring our credit and all of our legal documents. Now, I know that LifeLock does a lot of advertising. Can you have a little discussion about some of the ones that are out there, some of the companies that are trying to protect our credit and our identity and some of the features, please?
Yeah. Michael, go ahead.
Well, there's a lot of different services that provide, or I should say a lot of different businesses that provide these types of services. We hear about different names of CreditLock, LifeLock. What I would say is educate yourself on what free services are out there and available to you before you want to commit. There are certainly some benefits in the ease that these other programs will provide for you, and maybe they're doing it on your behalf, but it's important to know what you can do for yourself as well. A good example of that is the federal government during COVID had allowed consumers to access their credit report for free once per week. And most recently, they've made that a permanent perk or benefit for all of us consumers to check that. So taking the proactive approach to check your credit, whether it be each week or maybe once a month by yourself, is certainly something you could do and not have to pay for that service. In addition, these credit agencies also allow you to put a freeze on your credit for free. And what that does is it prohibits anyone from opening a new line of credit with your personal information. And then at some point you decide you need to apply, you can certainly thaw that out. It's free to do. And then apply for that and put the freeze back on. So two really great services that you can do by yourself without having to pay for any money and without any intimate knowledge of what all these other programs might offer. In addition to that, I think those two core things would help you decide, is the service worth it or not?
Let's take another call. Tiffany in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Tiffany.
Hi. I've been using the search engine DuckDuckGo for about 25 years. I never use Google. And DuckDuckGo does a really good job of filtering out spam. Well, about a year ago, I bought something online from Wayfair, that home goods company. And after that, for about 6 to 9 months, I got just tons of spam emails. Really, some of them pretty disgusting porn and just a whole variety of stuff. And I'm wondering, do companies like Wayfair sell their customer lists to other companies? And is that, because I'm guessing that's where all the spam came from.
Oh, yeah, I think that happens, Michelle.
Oh, for sure. I mean, data mining goes back decades now, and sharing email addresses is one of the basics of the beginning of the internet. So that it should be in the privacy policy. Whatever companies or affiliates someone will share your information and data with. So certainly you want to have awareness of that. Sometimes you can control through your settings whether or not you want to continue to receive or allow your data to be shared with their affiliates and others. But that is something that before you engage with a company and reviewing a privacy policy, you would see where that information shared, and then those affiliates may share and on and on. So it can definitely snowball on individuals.
There you go, Tiffany. Sabrina in Kenosha, we'll go to you. Hi, Sabrina.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. As far as like mail goes, I don't really check that often. I don't got no money, so I don't pay my bills whenever I get them. So I just usually toss those right in the garbage. However, I may have gotten scammed a lot over the telephone. There's an incident where they called and set up a fake bank account. They had me set up an account, and I set one up, and now I can't have access to it.
Wow, what should Sabrina be doing? Set up an account, Michael.
Yeah, Larry. A couple things Sabrina to do is first is notify law enforcement that a bank account has been created in her name. What they can do then is try to liaison with that particular lender or bank to try and confirm that it was set up fraudulently. We have heard about this happening before, and I do understand it can be difficult because the bank's going to ask you for confirmation or things that they want to verify. In fact, it should be closed, and that's difficult to do when you're not the one that created it, but your identity has been used. But starting with law enforcement and asking them to verify, in fact, that it is fraudulent, and then seeing where that goes with that particular bank.
And so be local law enforcement?
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Sabrina, do that. Thank you for calling. Lee in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Lee.
Yeah, hi. I'll be real quick. The Terrain Project Purchase Agreement out of Aurora, Colorado. I have property for sale in northern Lincoln County. They're offering me, for one of my parcels, $52,127.37. But what they want me to do, they want me to send them $1,000. And this $1,000, the buyer will pay the owner a purchase price of that amount that I told you about. The buyer will send the title company $1,000 earnest money deposit no later than June 12th. Refundable only if the owner cannot provide clean title. What do you think of that?
All right. What do you think of that, Michelle?
Well, this is something where you're going to definitely want to consult with an attorney, but it certainly seems like it has signs to different fake check frauds that we hear about where you're being asked to engage in a transaction, but you need to pay, even though you're the one with the good that they want to purchase, that you now need to pay and give them money in order to secure the deal. A real estate agent, an attorney could help you through any kind of sales transaction that you may actually want to engage with, and will be able to help spot some of those red flags for you in these transactions.
A check washing, is that what we call check washing?
No, this would be more fake check where, okay, you know, they're trying to have you pay them from money that they're going to give you type situation. Check washing is actually when you have written a legitimate check to pay a bill. It gets intercepted by a scammer, and then they use chemicals to wash the ink off the payee's name and the amount. And they now redirect that check to whatever they want and can change that amount. So say $100 turns into $1,000 or $10,000. So what happens is the consumer doesn't pay the bill they intended to. Now they're out more money. If they have overdraft protection, their savings account is being depleted, and the scammer has walked away with this money. So we really encourage consumers to combat this by making sure they have a gel pen that they write their checks with. And you'll see a lot of gel pens that actually indicate that they combat check washing. This is an old scam, if you will, that's been around for a while, but has perked back up because now scammers are getting more complicated in using technology to just create these checks using your information. They are intercepting the check somehow. So use a post office box at the post office. Don't let your mail sit in your mailbox. If you're out of town, put a hold on. So all tips to combat this, and always be sure you're monitoring, you know, your bank statement against your checks so you can spot this if it's happened.
One of the other topics we wanted to mention, and maybe in our last minute or so, is garage sales. We're into the season, at least in my neighborhood, but I bet in everybody else's too. What to watch out for?
Yeah, here we want consumers to watch for the hidden hazards, which is hard to do because they're hidden hazards, but certainly be aware of what you might be looking for. Hidden hazards are something that are not obvious to children for the most part. And so it could be in nursery equipment, it could be in toys, things like electrocution hazards, flammability hazards, lack of labeling, small parts, lead in products, magnets in batteries that aren't secure. So look for a product recall using the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission website or download their app before you go out garage sailing so you can check on a product before you bring it into the home and introduce it to the family. You want to be sure that you can search by the manufacturer or the product type that you might be looking for. So if you're on a hunt for a crib, you know, a spare crib to leave at grandma's house, be sure that you know about all the crib recalls before you go out there. Their standards have changed over time tremendously for safety purposes, and a kid just can't anticipate those hazards, and you want to be sure that you have safe products in the home, even if you're able to get them at a discounted rate.
Well, I tell you what, I want to thank you both, Michael and Michelle, for being with us today. We learned a lot, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you both so much for being with us. Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Bureau of Consumer Protection. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the pink tax. I am Larry Mueller, and you are listening to Wisconsin Public Radio News.